everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am joined today, tonight, for this very special pre-F This Movie Fest 4 episode to talk Demolition Man with Doug.
Mellow greetings. What seems to be your boggle?
Welcome back to the show, Douglas.
Thank you.
You were just on a week ago to talk about Heathers, and you didn't have a cold. What happened?
I know. Did you hear me? I tried to say thank you in my best falsetto, and it failed miserably because I have a cold. Unlike the future, where there are no sicknesses and are no illnesses, in 2015, Doug gets a common cold, and it sucks. And I apologize to the listeners out there if my voice sounds raspy or unlistenable.
Without a falsetto, what are the chances of you scoring that role in Jersey Boys?
Well, Pitch Perfect already said no.
What a bunch of Aka pitches or something. I don't think I have that right.
Aka jerk face.
Hey, we are talking about Demolition Man this week in celebration of F This Movie Fest 4, which takes place this Saturday, assuming you're listening to the show the week it comes out. Saturday, February 7th, starting at noon Central Standard Time. We are watching five movies from 1993 and tweeting about them all together. It's literally the most fun you'll have all year. For all of the details, go to fthismovie.net and check it out. Or you can follow us. We are at fthismovie on Twitter and follow the hashtag fthismoviefest. Don't worry. You'll see it on Saturday when it's trending. Motherfucker.
I'm sure it's already out there so much.
Did you hear that falsetto? Oh, man.
Wow, I was.
I'm a regular Anna Kendrick.
It gave me the goose pimples.
Yes. Yes. It was. Made you my pitch. Am I doing this right?
You're just saying you're substituting pitch for witch.
I pitch slapped
witch
you. That is correct. That is correct.
You're witch slapping
witch
me.
Witch with a W-H-I-C-H.
A witch. Yes, witch. Exactly. Am I saying this correctly?
That's right.
Now, you said before, this is the most fun you'll have all year.
Yeah.
Do you really mean that? Because I know you're a big fan of Scary Movie Month.
I am.
You're a big fan of Junesploitation. F This Movie Fest rate or rank?
Well, the thing of it is this all of this fun is concentrated over one 12-hour period. Those are month-long funs.
Yeah, right.
And so there's ebbs and flows over the course of 30 to 31 days, whereas this is like a 12-hour cocaine high.
It's just a sprint for sure.
Yeah.
Instead of a marathon is my point. I know there's like
I don't get the sports metaphors.
I don't run. I don't run often. Yeah. I don't. You know, marathon, like a 24-hour horror movie marathon.
Oh, got it. Yeah, we've done those.
This is more like a turkey trot, I think.
Go to fthismovie.net, find out details about F This Movie Fest 4, or just check out our site. We're putting stuff up every day. It's pretty awesome. We're celebrating 1993 week this week, so it's all 1993 related content. Douglas, the day that we're recording this show, you published trailers of all the movies that we're watching for F This Movie Fest.
I filled it
with fun facts.
Well, right, because, I mean, what's there to say about these movies or about the trailers? And I just wanted to kind of go and throw down some knowledge and hopefully enlighten our listeners and fans and friends. And it was fun. And it's also interesting to watch those. Okay, 1993 does not seem that far away. It feels like, I know it's 22 years in the past.
Yeah.
But it feels more like 12 to 15 years, which I know is kind of nominal, but who cares? When you watch those trailers, it's like, wow, 1993 was a long time ago. I'm surprised that every single character in every single movie has a mustache, is my point.
I know I already said this, but you should follow us on Twitter. We're at FThisMovie. Like our page on Facebook, facebook.com/FThisMovie. Email us at FThisMoviePodcast@gmail.com. Find us in the iTunes store. Again, thank you to those of you who have left us positive reviews. That's super nice and helps our show. Listen to us on Stitcher. I think I got it all.
You can also murder, death, kill us on Friendster.
Yes, we are on Friendster and that other thing, the name of which I can never remember.
Or Cut. You can enhance our calm on MySpace.
What's the proto MySpace?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, there was
a thing before MySpace, and I don't remember the name of it. But you can Demolition Man reference us on that.
Nice.
So we are going to be talking a little bit about F This Movie Fest 4. We're going to be talking a lot about Demolition Man. But first, Douglas Spartan.
And this is where I let everyone down right now. Okay, go on.
I must ask you.
Yes.
You were just on the show a week ago, so this is tricky. Have you seen anything good lately?
Now, listen, I've been sick. I mean,
which
I've
is the time to watch more movies, not fewer.
I've been watching more TV because I've been on this kind of like Dimetap.
This show is not about TV.
I know, but I've been on this kind of like, you know, weird, hazy, fuzzy, good trip feeling fun time.
You are a drug addict.
I love the marijuana sticks. And I saw Whiplash, which I don't think I've talked about on the show before, which is already now a month, 2 months old. I haven't really seen much else. Into the Woods, I kind of watched, although I got so disgusted with it, I left the room halfway through, but I listened to the whole movie.
Oh, so you got to hear them say, like, Into the Woods a lot.
It, you know, it's funny.
Into the Woods!
I have a screener from a mutual friend of ours.
Into the Woods!
And at first, when our friend, let's call him Philip, when he presented the screener, my first instinct was to say, yeah, no, that's okay. Like, I have no desire to see Into the Woods. But then my wife was there.
He passed it to you like a smallpox-infested blanket.
There you go. And I'm like, this will be a trail of tears to the multiplex. And my wife was like, no, I want to see this. It's you know, a musical.
It's Anna Kendrick. It's
right. And
She's
an acapella. I don't know. And I'm like, okay, I'll borrow it and reluctantly watch it. And so one night, of course, of all the stuff that I borrowed and all the options we have on Netflix and whatever else, my wife's like, let's watch Into the Woods. And I'm like, okay. So she puts it on. And I swear within 7 minutes, I'm just like, this is insufferable. The singing. And I know there's tons of jokes. Even I believe Tina Fey and Amy Poehler made a joke at the Golden Globes about that kind of singing. The
talk singing.
Yeah. I don't know how to really say it. I'm not going to do my, I have no falsetto right now, so I can't do my killer impersonation. Mm. Although I've realized with my cold, actually, I think I have a pretty good Stallone.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see where this podcast goes.
Mm-hmm. You'll see, you might hear a little bit later. That's my point. And before my cold, I had a pretty good Max Cherry from Jackie Brown. In fact, it went something like this. This is Max Cherry, Cary Bale Bonds.
That's good. I like it.
Not the best, but
it's
still.
Pretty good.
I said it one day out loud. I'm like, that's not bad.
I do a pretty good Robert Forster.
It might be a horrible Max Cherry, by the way, but I'm just delusional. So anyway, Into the Woods, I watched half of it. It's incredibly long. And even if it's not, I think it's over 2 hours, but even if it was an hour and a half, it still was incredibly long. And it's a lot of stories.
It feels kind of like one scene.
Yeah.
You know, because of the setting and the way that it's kind of structured, it's like characters kind of wandering around the woods for 2 hours. But
right. So it's not totally fair I even talk about this because I did like, I literally went, I think I worked on some F This Movie stuff in the other room.
I appreciate
while
that.
It was an earshot. I think I was working on some banner designs or something.
That's good.
And so I watched Whiplash. Whiplash is good, is fine. People love it. I have nothing bad to say about it. It did give me the most anxiety I've ever had in my life while watching a movie.
I thought you would like that movie a lot more than me.
I think I still like it more than you.
You
based
might.
On, you know, based on what you've talked about on the podcast and what you've written about it, you know, in previous columns and stuff, it seems like you're really lukewarm towards it. You don't dislike it, but you're
not at all.
A huge fan of it. It does seem to me that the J.K. Simmons character, J.K. Rowling. It's J.K. Simmons, right?
It's J.K. Rowling.
J.K. Rowling. I love the new adult fiction that he's doing. J.K. Simmons is a cartoon character. He's not, I mean, he's like what we talked about. I think J.B. and myself and you have talked about the Billy Zane character from Titanic being the most, you know, he has villain stamped on his forehead. There's no redeeming quality about this character. He is a cartoon character. He's so evil. And it's kind of, in that respect, it's a little one note for me. I love Miles Teller. I think he does a great job. I think the music in it is really great. There's a couple sequences that are just phenomenal. Do I want to watch it again? Hell no. Because I watched it kind of late at night and I thought, like, I hope I don't fall asleep. And not that that's a real concern, but I hate when I watch something late at night and it's like a struggle to get through.
Yes.
Thief.
Oh, come on now.
And this woke me up because my heart started pounding with nervousness and stress.
It does kind of sustain that energy for the entire running time too.
The last scene obviously is awesome.
It is.
I like how it's open to interpretation. I don't think it's as open to interpretation as some people might think, but I like that it is a little bit open to interpretation. Like, what does it mean? What does that look mean? Who's winning? What is the, you know, all this.
If you apply any scrutiny to it, like, it actually makes no sense what it takes to get to that scene. But
sure.
Whatever. I mean,
Right.
The scene still works, so I'm not going to say, like, but I don't buy it because it's totally fake. But when you actually think about the build-up to that moment, it's like, really? This was all a master plan? Okay. No, all right. I got it.
And I think that there's a really interesting message in the movie about, you know, what
it takes. Yeah, don't play drums, right? Did I take the wrong thing away?
Drums are the worst. How, you know, what does it take to make a genius musician or a genius anything, like in terms of mentors and teachers and how people teach and how people approach coaching those who have promising abilities? I think there's an interesting story there. I think this is going for the more cartoonish villain aspect of it, and I think that there's a bigger gray area. But I still think it's an interesting conversation to have. Does this movie have that conversation completely? No, but it's, you know, it's a good movie. I liked it.
It's very well made, and that guy's not even 30 yet, so fuck him. That's his
first movie, right?
Yeah, he wrote Grand Piano earlier this year, which is super entertaining. It's on Netflix if you guys haven't watched it yet, just as a Brian De Palma fan. I'm a fan, but
that's with
Elijah Wood.
Elijah Wood, right.
John Cusack.
That movie is incredibly fun and just such a little trifle, but really, really fun.
I have a suspicion that Elijah Wood might not be the best actor, but listen, let's not.
Well, you've made an argument though too with Elijah Wood that it, you know, regardless of his acting ability, we should thank him and praise him because he kind of seeks out these smaller movies and, you know, makes them.
And he's got his own like production studio now, and he's doing, you know, interesting genre movies, and so I'm a fan of that because he's just a champion for, you know, the independent horror scene. So that is great. And Grand Piano is a lot of fun. It's not nominated for any Oscars, though. I don't know if you noticed. Whiplash seems to be nominated for far more Oscars than Grand Piano.
Patrick, can I be honest? Can I be honest?
Please. Yes. The one thing that I ask is that you be honest.
Is naked honesty. I know that the Oscar nominations came out. I know at one point in my life, I read the list, and I'm saying my life like 2 weeks ago. The day it came out,
Before the cold, I got it.
I mean, I'm in this kind of like purple haze. Excuse me while I kiss this guy. I read the list the day they came out. I remember thinking like, well, this is the same old shit. It's uninteresting. It's boring. It's not experimental. There's nothing unique about this. It's really the same old pap that we've seen and experienced the last 5 to 10 to 15 to 50 years. I mean, obviously for you and me and people our age, it's maybe feels a little newer that the Academy has sucked so hard, but maybe they've sucked forever. I don't know. I have literally forgotten what people are upset about or what people are excited about. It, to me, the whole thing is just a big waste of time.
With that in mind, with you having forgotten all the nominations, I will tell you Grand Piano scored a whopping 16 nominations this year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, the truth of it is that I think these are the worst nominations in my lifetime, and I don't care because fuck that show. We have a new listener who's been going through all of our past episodes alphabetically, and it's fun because every once in a while the comments pop up with like, hey, that's a show we recorded 4 years ago, and he'll have an observation, and it's great. I want to say Wes is his name, and I it might not have been him, so I apologize, Wes, if this was not you. Someone recently
Wes Anders
said that our shows, the shows that you and I do, are fun to listen to, but that we have a tendency to get way off topic.
Yeah, what do you think? I mean, come on.
So I'm going to keep us on topic, and we're going to talk about Pitch Perfect 2.
No, because that's one person's opinion. F that. Pitch Perfect 2 all the way.
Do you understand? I want this podcast to be everything to everyone.
Well, it can't be. Prepare yourself for a world of hurt and disappointment. That's an interesting comment, and I completely understand. And
oh no, we totally do that.
Of course. If nothing else, I think we're going to. Our purpose is to entertain each other and make each other laugh, and hopefully we do that. I hope we entertain other people too. But I'm not a film professor. I'm here to talk about
Pitch Perfect 2. Then you lied on your resume.
Oh, shit. You remember that?
You're the only one, by the way, who submitted a resume.
Well, actually, please call it my CV.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll talk about a couple things quickly that I saw. I got to see Dear White People, finally, which came out this year. And I want to say the day that we are recording this, is just now out on DVD and Blu-ray. And I'm going to mispronounce this person's name, writer, director, Justin Simiens. So it is the first film from him. And it's really interesting. Like, I wouldn't say that it all works 100%. It's just about a group of black students at a college kind of dealing with issues of race, and they're all dealing with it in different ways. The little kid from Everybody Hates Chris is like all grown up and in it, as is Don Draper's secretary from Mad Men.
James Williams?
Yeah, that's him. It reminded me a lot of Spike Lee's School Days, minus the musical numbers, but it had that same kind of a feel in terms of the issues that it's dealing with. And I think it's totally worth seeing. I think it's rough. I think it's kind of a messy movie, but I think that's okay, because I think the messiness is a little bit by design, because this is a topic that you're not going to have, you know, cut and dried answers or...
Well, this is that guy's Tim Simeon. Is that his name? I don't know.
Justin.
This is first, you said this is who's Tim?
That's his brother.
Sorry. I'm the worst. That's his first movie, you said. So, I mean, unless you're the guy who made Whiplash, I mean,
that's... Yeah, right. As a first movie, it's good. I think it's really worth checking out. Much less good is Stephen King's A Good Marriage, which just showed up. It came out in very limited release earlier this year in VOD, maybe not this year, I guess last year, around October, I think. And it's based on a short story, obviously, by Stephen King. Joan Allen is the star, and she realizes that she's married to someone who might be a serial killer.
She also realizes, like, I shouldn't be in this movie.
She does. It does feel like she's slumming, because she's one of these actors who's good in everything. And it's not that she's bad in this. It's just she's not called upon to do anything. Like, the poster art for the movie are Mr. and Mrs. Towels. And the Mr. Towel is all, like, blood-stained. Mm. And that
is
the best part of the movie, the poster. It's like, it's not even that it's horrible. It just is, it feels like a Lifetime movie. It barely feels like a movie.
I was going to say, what you're describing actually sounds like a made-for-TV movie.
Yes.
And not like,
change
did this get
to,
a theatrical release?
Change it to Dean Cain and the Valerie Bertinelli, and this is a Lifetime movie. Absolutely.
Okay.
It got maybe a very limited theatrical release. I think it was more of like a VOD thing. And I can see why. Had I gone to see this in a theater, I would have been way bummed out.
Yeah.
And lastly, I'm not really allowed to say much about it.
Ooh.
Yeah, look at me.
Look at Mr. Brownlee. Like, I belong to some critics associations. I got some screeners. I'll do my review later.
Whatever. So, the people that listen to this podcast or read this site know that I'm a fan of the writer-director Adam Green, who made the Hatchet movies and Frozen, has a TV show on what used to be FearNet called Holliston that I like.
Is that still on, by the way?
Well, there's no more FearNet, so who knows what will happen to Holliston. Okay. It may come back. Who knows?
That sucks.
Yeah. Anyway, he has a new movie called Digging Up the Marrow.
Yes, I've heard about this on Instagram. I follow Mr. Green on Instagram, and he posts about it all the time.
Yeah, it's like it's a really weird, hard movie to describe. It's shot like a documentary, but it's very much a fiction movie. It's not found footage. It's not trying to pretend to be real. Adam Green plays himself. Mm. He gets sent these letters from a guy played by Ray Wise, who is amazing in the movie. It's worth
Ray Wise is typically always pretty
awesome. He is always great, but like there most of the time I'm just like, oh man, Ray Wise is great. It's fun to watch Ray Wise be Ray Wise.
Right.
But this was like, holy shit, Ray Wise is on another level here.
Yeah.
I'm not just watching him be all Ray Wise. So he sends a letter saying that he has found real monsters, like an entrance to this underground place that he calls the Marrow, where monsters live. And so Adam Green sets out to follow this guy and see real life monsters. And I can't really talk about the movie except to say that it comes out on VOD, I think, at the end of February. And is getting a limited theatrical run. Adam Green is actually touring with it in a few cities with like an art exhibit. They're kind of like four-walling. If you are a
fan... Okay, now to explain that to a person, I don't know what four-walling means.
It means like basically they're buying out the theater.
Okay.
And doing it all themselves, you know.
No, I was saying that on behalf of people who might not know.
Sure,
I, of
course, not a person with a kick-ass falsetto, not like yourself.
And podcasts are very, very on topic.
So they're not exactly four-walling, but they kind of are. And there's an art show that goes along with it because Alex Pardy did all the art. And so if you're a fan of Adam Green, if you're just a fan of horror movies that are different, I think you should check it out on VOD when it comes out later this month, and I'll talk more about it once I am allowed, but I'd like
so that's like at least 2 weeks away, at least maybe three. Yeah. So are you going to write a column about that or
probably,
do a podcast on it?
Probably, okay. Yes.
Cool.
But I liked the movie and I think people should see it. Let's talk Demolition Man.
Let's do it.
In the past, leading up to F This Movie Fest, this is our fourth one, so I guess for the last three F This Movie Fest, usually the podcast that airs right before the fest is usually you and I just kind of talking about whatever. And so this year we kind of went another way and said, well, we can talk about one of the movies that we'll actually be watching at the fest. And in part because a few months ago you had said, what about a show on Demolition Man?
Yeah.
Which is a great idea. So
thank you.
We're all going to be watching
Waiting months to hear you say that.
We're all going to be watching Demolition Man together on February 7th and tweeting about it. So hopefully this podcast will get you primed for that.
Some context too. I was on a website. I forget which website. It was like a film forum website, and it was a question was raised, and the question was just a general question where someone asks, "What movie is so bad it's good?" And that's it. It's kind of a cheap question, but whatever. I mean, are there movies that are so bad they're good? Because I think that sometimes if something is good, it's good. You know, it doesn't have to be so bad. I guess Troll 2 is so
bad.
Well,
and that's
good.
The one that you kind of point to, right? And so at right. What point does your enjoyment stop being ironic and just become enjoyment? Like,
right. So some person wrote Demolition Man, and the response that got was through the roof. You know, tons of people were like, yeah, right on, that movie, you know, is awesome, but what a joke, and just such a support of this notion of so bad it's good. And I think I made an account and chimed in. I said, you are all insane. That movie is not so bad it's good. That movie is just plain good. It knows what it is. It knows what it's doing. Stop it. I went, stop it.
Well, all right. I want to open up the conversation with this question, and it's probably along the same lines. And you can answer this. Yes. Is Demolition Man the smartest stupid movie ever made, or is it the stupidest smart movie ever made?
My first instinct, and without – I mean, I've not heard this question before, and I've not thought about it for more than – seven Please. Seconds. My first instinct is the former. It's the what was
I don't
it?
Remember what is it the smartest stupidest? I don't remember what it is.
No, it's the stupidest. Stupid no, it's the smartest stupidest movie. I think it's the smartest stupidest movie. I don't think it's a stupid. I don't think it's a stupid. What?
These aren't even words anymore. I don't know.
Stickers.
Because
it doesn't sound like a word.
Here's the thing. There is stuff in Demolition Man, and I think today in your column you had mentioned Starship Troopers, and we've done a podcast on that movie, and we both love that movie, and that movie's pretty much perfect. Like, that movie works on every level that it's supposed to work.
Yes.
And you kind of compared this to Starship Troopers, and I definitely can draw some comparisons in terms
of – Yes, and I can defend that and elaborate on that because I'll let you finish, but I don't want to –
I know. I definitely see comparisons in terms of the satire and the vision of the future and the way that it combines action that's fun to watch and works on a bunch of different levels. But I don't know what it is. If Daniel Waters wrote a script, and I wish I knew the exact history of Demolition Man. Like, so Daniel Waters, we talked about last week on the show because he wrote Heathers, which we loved, and he wrote Demolition Man. And I don't know if Daniel Waters wrote a script that then was passed around to two other people who ruined it, or if Daniel Waters got his hands on a garbage script.
I think that's what happened.
And did a lot of work to make it what it is today, which is mostly successful.
What I've read, and it's very – I'm obviously inferring a lot. I don't think there's a definitive biography of the – timeline of the story.
Should you be the person who writes that biography?
I think I'm the definitive right now,
compendium to Demolition Man.
In what would you call it? Of Demolition Man. I just want to use annals anywhere I can. In
what
any
would you
book
call your essay on Demolition Man?
The Annals of Demolition Man?
Maybe. I would call it, like, On the Three Seashells. Or Send a Maniac to Catch a Maniac.
How about Murder, Death, Right? The W-R-I-T-E with an exclamation point.
Done.
Anyway, so I read something, and again, it's not explicit, but I inferred a lot, where the story itself, the story, again in quotes, the story was written by Peter Lemkoff and Robert Renault. And then the screenplay is written by Peter Lemkoff, Robert Renault, and Daniel Waters. So that, to me, means that Peter Lemkoff,
right,
who is mostly known for TV like Hawaii Five-0 and CSI something, and I think he also did Son-in-Law. He wrote Son-in-Law.
Okay.
And
it's Robert, the picture's starting to come together.
And Robert Renault, who has like five writing credits and only one you recognize, and that would be Action Jackson.
Oh.
So, yeah, right. So Peter Lemkoff is mostly TV and has hardly any writing credits. He's more of a producer, too, I think. And Robert Renault, who has hardly any writing credits, I think that they came up with the story, and then Daniel Waters fixed it and added a bunch of satire and a bunch of jokes. And even the idea of starting in the 90s and going to the future, I think, was Daniel Waters, because I think the original story had it just take place in the future.
Oh, okay.
It's also, I think, someone, there's a book, and I don't have this in front of me right now, but I read a while back that there's a book, a foreign book, like in Hungary, that pretty much is the same exact story, meaning two criminals, or a criminal and a cop, were frozen and woke up. In the book, I think it's the 22nd century, and fight each other in a society that is nonviolent and peaceful, and they have no clue how to deal with this supervillain, so they bring back pretty much the same thing. So if the genesis and the germ and the seed is in that Hungarian book or whatever Eastern European book, and then these two jokers wrote the story, Daniel Waters punched it up. And actually, I heard, too, that Fred Decker did an uncredited rewrite on it.
Really?
So, yeah.
This also explains why it might be good. Son-in-Law, by the way, came out in 1993, as did Fred Decker's last theatrical feature, RoboCop 3. Just a little more 1993 trivia for you.
I love it. Movie I Fest. Love 93 trivia. Fans. This is great.
So I don't even know where to start talking about this movie, because I love it unironically, but I recognize there's a lot in it that is terrible. Now, I might love it unironically, because even the shit that's terrible is the stuff that I love, because I love stupid Joel Silver produced action movies like Action Jackson. So when you say that, I'm like, oh yeah, well that makes sense.
In fact, everyone out there, please visit fthismovie.net and read Patrick's heavy action column on Action Jackson.
Yes, yes. So Demolition Man was actually like the first movie that I ever went to go see where I got to, like, after I got my driver's license, I was able to like drive to and from school a little bit, but this was like the furthest I had ever ventured out alone without an adult in the car, and it was to drive and see Demolition Man in 1993. So it was always, it will always hold a special place in my heart. And I went in kind of expecting just more typical Stallone, you know. And it's a movie that, again, I think is just, it's a little smarter and a little bit better than you think it's going to be, than it probably should be. And that's why I think it kind of, over the years, has caught on as kind of a cult movie, because I think it was fairly misunderstood at the time. I mean, I think it did fine at the box office, and I'm sure it got some decent reviews, but I think most people were just like, oh, it's so stupid. The only restaurant is Taco Bell. And it's like, no, that's the fucking great thing. The only restaurant is Taco Bell.
Right, right, right.
The stuff that Daniel Waters added is the stuff that's really great in the movie. But it's three movies fighting for dominance, right? It's the Daniel Waters movie that is good and smart and Verhoeven and kind of the Starship Troopers, you know, comparison that you were drawing. And then there's a Stallone movie where he seems to maybe have rewritten a lot of his own dialogue. And then Wesley Snipes is kind of in a third movie, which is the Wesley Snipes Show. And all three of those movies are going on at once.
And a lot of them they're at odds with each other a lot.
Yes,
too,
very much so. And that's why it's such a weird, jarring movie. There's a funny moment. And we're just going to be jumping all over the place. So if you've never seen it, obviously you're going to be watching with us on Saturday. There's a funny moment late in the film when the car crashes and it fills with airbag foam or whatever and freezes over. And that's just a whatever. It's a little futuristic detail. No more airbags. We're going to fill cars with foam and freeze them because for some reason that's more convenient than just an airbag. So that happens. Stallone gets out of the car and he has like some holes in his shirt because he's been beaten up. And Sandra Bullock, who we will be talking about as Lenina Huxley, says like, "Oh, you look like hell, John Spartan." Obviously, she doesn't say that because she would be fined one credit. But she says, "You look terrible." And he's like, "Oh, that's okay. Just, you know, just give me a needle and thread." And it's this funny little throwaway thing because it's already established he knows how to sew. And his memory has been implanted while he was in cryo sleep with the knowledge of how to sew, right?
So I love hearing you talk about this. Go on.
So it's this funny little throwaway joke, right?
Cryo sleep.
And so that's, to me, like the Daniel Waters joke. That's the, that's fine, just give me a needle and thread. Ha ha, we can move on. No, wait, we can't because then we got to fucking stop. So Stallone can like do a double take and be like, "Did I just really say that?
Wow. Okay, I thought I could do a Stallone. Holy shit,
your Stallone that was not a good Stallone
out of the park, dude. Come on, that Stallone was great. Hey, did I just say that? I can't even do it. That's, your Stallone is perfect.
Like, okay, I love Sylvester Stallone as somebody who loves action movies. I love Sylvester Stallone, but we can also acknowledge he's kind of the worst, right? Like, his attempts at doing comedy in this movie all fall flat, with the exception of his timing on the Rat Burger. I think the timing on Rat Burger works. Everything else, he kills jokes like he kills bad guys.
You were in a band in high school called Rat Burger, I believe.
We were, decent. We were decent.
Two-word review, shit burger. He's all over the place. The movie is such, like you had mentioned, it's three different things competing. I do think that there's more in common with the Stallone-Wesley Snipes bits than there is with the Daniel Waters bits.
Definitely.
And in 2015, the Daniel Waters bits are the stuff that makes it a cult classic, that makes it rewatchable, that makes it interesting, and makes it thoughtful and thought-provoking. And the Stallone-Wesley Snipes stuff is kind of absurd. In fact, I mean, I want to go a step further and say, Stallone, yes, kind of the worst. Wesley Snipes as Simon Phoenix, he is like, I don't even know. He's like Max Headroom.
Yeah, I don't understand, because he was a star by this point and like could theoretically carry his own movie. And so for him to play the villain opposite Stallone, while I'm sure was high profile and a decent payday, like seemed, I wouldn't say beneath him, but they could have gone with a guy who wasn't necessarily a big star, you know, and kind of made the same movie. But they get Wesley Snipes, and then they're like, to make up for somehow that like the part is beneath, they just let him do whatever he wants.
Yeah, you could almost sense, because he wants to have equal footing and equal billing with Stallone, that he's going to make his character as obnoxious and ridiculous
and
as
none
possible.
None of it works. Like, I couldn't tell you one thing about his character except like he laughs a lot, but I don't even understand. He seems like coked out of his mind, and I don't think it's an acting choice, and I don't necessarily think that Wesley Snipes was, I'm not accusing Wesley Snipes of being coked out of his mind, but it seems like an actor not in control of his own abilities. Like, he's maybe trying to do something, but it just got away from him.
Well, he's still tethered by the horrible dialogue, which is like, I mean,
and all the weird like choices that every time he's on screen, there's just like like weird shit that the director's throwing in. Anyway, sorry.
I want to say two things. One, his name is Simon Phoenix, and
yes,
I think that name was reverse engineered, because obviously you need a villain in an action movie against Sylvester Stallone, and they probably, I don't have this, this is just a pure guess, but they probably had a couple different names at different points
of
the script's
like
development.
Tom Phoenix?
I think it could have been anything. It could have been just like Joe Smith, but then they were like, oh, wouldn't it be, they came up with a joke where Phoenix rises from the ashes, so we'll call his last name, of course, will be Phoenix. And then they came up with a bunch more jokes where Simon says die, and
there are
Simon
so many
says,
fucking Simon
bleed.
Says,
and it's like, of course, his name is Simon fucking
but
Phoenix.
This is the shit that I'm talking about. Like, in the same movie where you have like you're charged for swearing and the three seashells and Taco Bell, which again, it's just, this movie was making fun of, I'm jumping all over the place, but
it's all right.
Daniel Waters was making fun of political correctness, I think, several years before that really became accepted. You know, sure. I think we were just even learning what political correctness was still at this time. And yet here's Daniel Waters kind of saying this is the path that it essentially will go down. And so there's stuff in the movie that just really feels smart and subversive and genuinely funny. And like you said, that's the reason that the movie catches on. But then you also have them doing their shit one-liners, Stallone and Wesley Snipes doing their shit one-liners from a much lesser action movie from like 4 years earlier. Like the dialogue that they have is on par with Tango and Cash.
Yes. Mind now, here's,
I
here's,
love Tango and Cash. Well,
that's just it. Here's the schism with Starship Troopers. I think going back to your first, you know, and I think I made mention in my awesome column, which blew up the internet. Unlike Kim Kardashian, my column destroyed people's computers. I referenced how I think that this movie knows what it is and is smarter than people give it credit for. And again, the context that I brought up before was to say, like, people think this is so bad it's good. I say, no, it's just good. The schism between that and Starship Troopers is Starship Troopers is all – everything about Starship Troopers works in my opinion. I think the action is top rate. The effects are awesome. They're unbelievable. They're cutting edge. The direction is really smart and really specific and particular. The acting, which is probably the weakest link, works simply because, and we talked about this on the podcast, so I don't revisit all that stuff, but it works because the actors, some actors know what they're doing, some actors don't, but no matter what, you've got Paul Verhoeven pulling the strings like a master puppeteer, and the whole thing comes out really, really well. This movie now has a lot of the same things that are in Starship Troopers, but I think I want to disagree with something you said earlier. I think the action in this movie is actually not the best. I think that there's some decent action sequences and some little, sequences and whatnot that work. But overall, I think it's the action is just there to be placeholder, time filler nonsense. I don't think there's anything in this movie that goes above and beyond and or reinvents the wheel, whereas Starship Troopers, I think so much of the action is so cutting edge, and I've never seen this before. This movie's just kind of like, well, I've seen this a million times. You got to have a mano-a-mano fight between Snipes and Stallone, whatever. I'm okay with it. Now, the interesting thing is, like you just said, the dialogue, which leans on the garbage side, is we're okay with it because we happen to like the Tango and Cash. I mean, I say we. I know you way more than me. I'm only recently, the past 5 years, introduced to Tango and Cash and movies of that ilk. But so much of that sort of 80s, mid-80s to early 90s action formula, which is in this, I have such a reverence, not reverence, but such a fondness for. So it works in that respect too, but some of the lines, there's so many, I feel like there has to be another person that they brought on set just to write so much of the shit dialogue, you know?
Yeah, I'm positive it was Stallone. I mean, he used to really rewrite every script with which he was associated and would always take a writing credit.
There's one line specifically, sorry to cut you off.
No, that's okay.
He says, somebody put me back in the fridge.
Yeah.
And it's such like a weird like, he's protesting about something that the chief said, what's his name? Bob Gunton, the chief who's the super stick up his ass, authority figure. And he says, someone put me back in the fridge. And it's just like, who is he talking to? It's such a weird, like, this is what a TV dinner feels like.
Right.
Which, again, I love Die Hard. Die Hard's the best. But that line is shit. But I don't care because the movie's awesome. And just like with Demolition Man, I don't care because the movie's awesome.
Well, and one of the things that I think the movie is never quite able to pull off is this idea that John Spartan, even in 1993, or no, it starts in what, like 95? When does it start?
96.
96, I'm sorry, the future.
Right. With Johnny.
So
Johnny
starts with Johnny in the future. It opens with this idea like Cinemaniac, the Catcher Maniac, and you don't ever really get the idea.
God damn it, that's good.
You don't ever get the idea that he's actually a maniac, except for when he like jumps off the helicopter. Like,
right.
He's just being Stallone. He's been that guy in every movie, so we're never like, oh my god, he's really crazy this time.
You think he should be more Martin Riggs from Lethal Weapon?
Yeah.
Like, gun in his mouth, about to kill himself.
Just something crazy, because then when he gets to the future, he's supposed to be this sort of uncouth brute, and he is by the standards of the future that they establish. You know what I mean? But it's like if any normal guy went to that future. And sometimes I wish that it was almost like a Bruce Willis or a Kurt Russell or like a guy with some better, or Mel Gibson, some guy with better acting chops who was able to convey that quality beyond just other characters' horror and incredulity at the way that he's acting. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I yeah.
Like somehow he's defined as this savage only by other characters being like, oh my God, you're a savage. And I kind of wish that he had done some of that work himself.
No, it's all written for him. It's all written in the characters that talk about him.
Right.
Nothing in his action. In fact, even in the future, it's revealed, and this is minor spoilers for Demolition Man,
That's
but it's
right.
revealed that his wife had passed away in the big earthquake of 2010, which, you know, to step back a moment and pause and think about that. Okay, so you've got John Spartan in the future learning that his wife had died and his daughter, we don't know where she is. Like, that's not the life of a maniac. He doesn't ask about the first thing he
right,
does when he's
right.
thawed isn't to say like, oh, my wife and daughter, I'm heartbroken. It's like he's going to eat a person's face if he's a maniac, you know?
Right. Right. He's never quite up to the level of crazy that Wesley Snipes is, obviously, because Wesley Snipes is going so over the top in a way that to me isn't fun. Like, there are actors who go way over and it's like, oh man, he's having a blast. This is so fun. Wesley Snipes, I just am a little bit embarrassed for him.
It's kind of embarrassing. The fight sequences, there's one fight sequence in particular where he's outside of what looks like a phone booth. It's more like a computer interface, but there's something, I can't describe the music beats and the cues. It's not traditional like rap. There's no one talking, but
right.
it's a
no,
bunch
it's
of
record
scratches.
This is what I'm talking about. And they do him no favors because when he's on screen, they add quirk on top of quirk,
yeah,
and it makes no sense.
It's a guy with a Casio keyboard going like, huh, huh,
right,
huh, pressing the, that's the one.
And
button.
They've already given him the wacky overalls and the blonde hair, and he's already acting so silly. Like, we don't need to pile more fucking nonsense on top of what Wesley Snipes is already doing, but for some reason, Marco Brambilla, genius that he is like, no, let's do some more shit.
Let's do some more shit. My name is Marco Brambilla.
He is Count Chocula when he's not directing Demolition Man.
My name is Marco Brambilla.
93, to me, is a very important Stallone year because I feel like he had fallen out of favor a little bit.
No, this was his comeback movie.
Well, this and Cliffhanger. Cliffhanger was actually the comeback movie. And by the time...
No.
By the time... Because this came out in October. Cliffhanger was in like May. And by the time this podcast airs... I still won't have published the Cliffhanger article, but go to fthismovie.net if you want to read something about Cliffhanger. I wrote a heavy action column on Cliffhanger for 93 week, and I talk about this idea that it was that movie and Demolition Man are really Stallone's comeback movies, and in both of their own ways kind of speak in like almost a weird meta-textual way about his comeback. Like Cliffhanger – it's this idea, and I write about this in the column, so I apologize to repeat myself, but it's this idea that the accident that happens at the beginning of Cliffhanger is like his career, his star falling. And so he is shaken and he lacks confidence. And by the end of the movie, he's remembered that he's Stallone and he's awesome and he kills all the bad guys. And he's back on top because the movie's a success. And we're like, Stallone's back. And then Demolition Man has fun with this idea of, is there still a place for this kind of guy, for this kind of action hero, you know?
Yeah.
And the problem is that the movie's not smart enough to really work with that idea because it is produced by Joel Silver, because so much of it just is the traditional Stallone action
sure.
movie that the movie answers his own question. Like, yeah, there's a fucking place for it. Look at him being awesome. Listen to these dumb lines.
Right.
I just wish it had gone a little bit further with the contrast between like future America and present day Stallone and what happens when those two things get together. But, you know, it has to ultimately be like, no, Stallone's so awesome. He's just going to bring the past with him and change the country like to be in his image, never adapt.
You had mentioned Cliffhanger. You know, it's interesting. I've only seen about the first half hour of Cliffhanger, and there's a whole story to that, which I won't get into right now, but I saw Cliffhanger back in 94, 95 on VHS, the first half hour of it.
The way
abruptly,
it's meant to be seen.
Right, of course, in a very small hotel TV in Green Bay, Wisconsin. So having not seen all of Cliffhanger and not really being familiar with Cliffhanger and not even thinking about Cliffhanger until literally 3 minutes ago, because you mentioned Cliffhanger, I never, and this might just be me, but I never thought of Cliffhanger as a typical sort of hashtag heavy action vehicle. I don't know if it is. I don't know. I mean, I obviously defer to you as the action expert on the site.
Oh, it totally
is. But Cliffhanger to me seems like it's about mountain climbing. Obviously it's Stallone, but it's not like what I think of the archetypal sort of.
By the way, this is only because you saw the first half hour. I'm not spoiling Cliffhanger, but it turns into Die Hard on a mountain.
Okay.
The remaining 90 minutes are just Stallone literally murdering people left and right on a mountain. At one point, he picks what's the one that hangs from the top? Stalactite. At one point, they're in a cave, and he picks a dude up and impales him on a stalactite. So it's just a lot of murder.
And that's – okay, that makes – because I was thinking it was more just a survival, like almost like a Live-type movie without having seen the whole
that's
movie.
That's Daylight. You're thinking of Daylight, where has to survive in a tunnel collapse or something.
In my head, I never really thought of it as more of a heavy action thing and whatever, and it really never – did Cliffhanger make a lot of money?
It sure did, man.
Okay. That's crazy to me because I know
– it was huge.
Demolition Man, I think, cost $70 million and made – I think domestically made about $55 or $58 million in the U.S. And then worldwide total with the U.S. was close to $160. And it's interesting. So it kind of made its money back and made maybe a little money for the people involved. And surprisingly, kind of side note, that Marco Brambilla, aside from, I think, Excess Baggage,
yes,
went on to do nothing,
yeah,
has done nothing with his career. So that's interesting because I don't think the movie is horribly directed. I think there's a lot of interesting / bad choices, but it's not. I mean, it's a competent movie, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty much a work for hire job. I mean, I think he... I was about to say, like, I think he gets the tone right, but no, he doesn't. He has no handle on the fucking tone, which is why it's three movies in one. And the only attention that I really think gets called to bad directing is that the last few moments of the showdown when he, you know, forgot to undercrank the camera, overcrank the camera, whatever would put it in slow motion.
Oh, yeah.
And so he just does that bullshit.
Oh, that was
fake
such a thing. That was such a thing, though, in the early 90s where it was like the fake strobe slow motion.
Hate it. Always.
Even Lethal Weapon 2, the villain's death, yes, in Lethal Weapon 2 is a strobe. Which, by the way, I was going to quickly say, maybe for me personally, the worst villain death ever is when a container box falls on the South African villain in Lethal Weapon 2. And one of the best villain deaths is Wesley Snipes' villain death in Demolition Man, where, spoilers, he dies. Sorry.
That's all right.
He's frozen with the cryo chemical, yeah, which is never, but it's like instantly, it's Ice 9, basically. He's frozen instantly, and then Stallone, hanging from this twirling apparatus, spins around and kicks his head off, decapitating him.
Yeah, but not
which
before
is not
he
enough.
Goes, heads up.
Right. But that's not even enough. Then the head falls on the ground and shatters into a billion bloody frozen pieces.
Please explain this to me. Yes. It bounces once. It shatters on the second fucking bounce. How does
you must
that
not
work?
Know much about
science,
ice physics.
Also, how does Stallone outrun freezing? He outruns explosions and ice in this movie.
They're all like, "Be well." He's like, "Be fucked."
Stallone.
Okay, so I was going back to the whole Cliffhanger, Demolition Man, kind of the resurgence of Sylvester Stallone. It was brought up, I'm not sure on what website, but there's lots of comparisons made between Demolition Man and Last Action Hero.
And they came out the same year?
They came out the same year. I think they cost around the same thing, and they made about the same thing.
Last Action Hero only made $50 million?
I think overall it made close to $150.
Oh, okay.
So I think,
quick side note, I'm sorry,
yeah,
reader, listener who says we get off topic too quickly. Mm-hmm. The summer that Last Action Hero came out, I'm such and I mentioned this, I think, in my Netflix column last week. I am such a fan of action movies, and particularly of Arnold Schwarzenegger at that time, because he's coming off of Terminator 2, and to me, Schwarzenegger can do no wrong. And he's got this new movie coming out called Last Action Hero, and I bought the soundtrack, and I'm listening to AC/DC, who I fucking hate. And I'm so confident in Last Action Hero's box office viability that I remember thinking, And this is 93. I'm like 16. I should fucking know better. But I remember thinking, like, Jurassic Park, enjoy it while you know, because I think Last Action Hero came out a week after Jurassic Park. And I remember thinking, like, well, Park, you've got 1 week. Park. Better enjoy it, because pretty soon Jack Slater's going to come along and totally oust you. You
in the dino dick.
Yeah, exactly. And I could not have been more wrong. I literally could not have been more wrong.
Well, okay, so Last Action Hero comes out, and it makes money. It's not a traditional, you know, quantitative bomb.
But see, I quote Jack Slater in Last Action Hero when he says, "It's a bomb."
What's a bomb? You're a bomb. Okay, so Last Action Hero comes out. It costs the same. It makes the same. It's got similar elements to the stories, you know, whatever, like the fish out of water character.
And they're both trying to be a little bit smarter,
right,
than the typical just shoot everyone action movie that became so popular in the 80s, which I give both credit for.
So now you've got the general consensus in 2015 is to say Last Action Hero is a bomb. It's a disappointment. It's an embarrassing movie. Whereas Demolition Man is smart. And, you know, I even say that it's ahead of its time. It's blah, blah, blah. So why the disconnect? Is it because that, like you just said, Schwarzenegger was on this high after T2? And I mean, he could do no wrong. And this movie was like a big disappointment. And Stallone, who had, you know, kind of disappeared from you know, culture for a long time, had come back, and this was his resurgence. Is that it, or is there something? Is there more to it?
I don't know. I think Last Action Hero, in a lot of ways, is a victim of just its own hubris. It was really shoved down people's throats in '93, and it's a movie that just to me they never quite cracked. And I love Schwarzenegger, and I love action movies, but that movie still doesn't really work for me. A ton of people would disagree with me and disagree with you. I think a lot of people do love it and think it's as good or better than Demolition Man.
People disagree with?
Yeah, they're crazy. Yeah. They think it's as good or better than Demolition Man, and they think it's underrated and great in the same way that we are talking about Demolition Man. So I guess it just kind of depends on what side you're coming from. But for me, it's like Last Action Hero was like too big, too confident.
I don't feel like there was enough maniacs sent in the future to catch maniacs
for its own good. And Demolition Man is like this weird underdog that like came out of nowhere, and you see it and you're like, oh, that's somehow smarter and better than almost every other Sylvester Stallone movie to date.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know.
Hmm.
Do we talk about, should we talk about Sandra Bullock?
Yeah, I was going to say, let's talk about the cast and start with Ms. Bullock.
So Ms. Bullock at the time had been in stuff, not a ton of stuff I had seen, because I had maybe caught Love Potion number 9 on cable, right, but I'm pretty sure I hadn't yet seen Fire on the Amazon.
I think it was years later that I saw scenes from Fire on the Amazon.
So this was, yeah. I think my only exposure to her was like as the wife in the remake of The Vanishing, which also came out in 93. So she makes the movie to me. Like, I think without her, I'm not even positive we're still talking about this movie. There's so much that still works about it. All of it really attributed to Daniel Waters' screenplay, I think.
Right.
But she's the one who sells this future, this squeaky clean, innocent, sweet, adorable, fresh face, please marry me future.
Yes.
And at the same time sells us on giving a shit about John Spartan, because she looks up to him, she likes him. By the end, she may love him. She may want to have 10,000 of his babies. She's finally down with the kissing, you know?
Yes.
Not the making love. Yeah, when he's like, that's what you call that?
Well, put me back in the fridge.
Could they have less chemistry when they kiss at the end? It's like a father kissing his daughter. It's just like, oh, that is so.
Hey, well, that was.
I know. I read your thing that was originally one ending or one possible plot twist.
I'm glad they didn't do that, obviously. But one possible twist was that she was actually John Spartan's daughter. But it's like, how do you even explain that? You know, whatever.
Right. Would it have made the movie any better? Not necessarily. So she's just so great, and she's funny and good. And I'm not positive that like somebody saw this and then put her in Speed. In fact, there's no way that happened, because this came out in October. Speed's out in like May. So she had probably already shot Speed by the time this came out. But I could see someone seeing this movie and saying, like, well, I didn't love it, but
right.
she's going places. Thin she's going to win an beauty. Oscar for The right. Blind Side.
She can do a Southern accent like no one else. No, she's great. And her earnestness, the way she delivers the lines, it's not tongue-in-cheek. It's not ironic. It's so sincere and adorable, and she's the best. I would love to be the B director or the, you know, whatever. I'm not sure of the parlance.
Like a director industry. Who is a B? Is that?
Yeah, like a you know, like bzz, bzz, more like this, you know. No, the guy who shot her cyber sex sequences, which I have to assume they used a body double for the body shots, but like just her orgasming face. I want to be that guy.
It's a weird day on set. I don't know.
I'm going to put up these green lights and these yellow lights and give me more honey. Cause he's
rest of the cast, I mean, obviously is filled with a lot of like recognizable character actors. You have Glenn Shaddix.
What happened to Glenn Shaddix, by the way?
Right? It's I don't funny. Know.
He was in Heathers. We talked about that last yeah. week. He was in, I mean, Beetlejuice is probably his most famous.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, he just was in the late 80s, early 90s and then disappeared. Maybe by his own choice. I have no idea, but it's interesting because he was such, and by the way, he's also a cartoon character. It's like what character, like what bumbling kind of fey character. It's such a weird, broadly written like person to make fun of, you know?
Right. You have Nigel Hawthorne, you have Bill Cobb, you have Rob Schneider popping up. Rob Schneider.
Probably the, I mean, so we're so quick to, I mean, Rob Schneider has become a caricature of himself. He's just over the top, and his whole like, you know, his persona is just that SNL, what's the character he does?
Making copies?
Like, yeah. Making copies. The copy guy. That's like the whole, he became famous and it became this catchphrase in the 90s, blew up because of Rob Schneider. In this
like,
movie,
Demolition Man, Demolition Rama, Demolition Ding Dong.
He's uncredited, by the way. He's not even in the credits, which
for
is
real?
Yeah. And he's like not annoying, which is kind of funny because
he is annoying, but he's supposed to be.
Well, and it's not in the way that you want, like it's annoying in the way that like he's kind of a peon or, you know, some pipsqueak, whatever. But not in the way that is over the top and hammy and look at me. In fact, if you said to me like this movie is going to contain Dennis Leary and Rob Schneider, which one do you think you'll be more annoyed by? I would be surprised to say Dennis Leary.
We'll talk about Dennis Leary in one second. Do you think that this movie someone saw and was like, we got to reteam Schneider and Stallone in a little movie called Judge Dredd? Can you do your Judge Dredd quote for me?
Hey, put me back in the tower.
No, come on.
Put me back in the peach tree. Is that Judge Dredd?
Judge Dredd is like, do your Armand Asante in Judge Dredd.
Dude, you're. I feel like I'm under the bus right now, and I, as a B, it's okay because I can just fly away.
You be Armand Asante, right? Okay, you're in Judge Dredd. You're Armand Asante. I'm Stallone. I'm gonna say like I'm the law, and you say
law.
There it is. Thank you.
I need a little context. Thank you, because
I said Armand Asante, I thought you would get it because,
dude, for the life of me, I'm like an idiot right now. My brain's not on Judge Dredd, but you say Armand Asante, the Rolodex in my brain is like flipping through so fast. I'm like, who the fuck is Armand Asante? But I do know he says law.
So they reteamed in that movie, and I would argue that Rob Schneider is annoying in the exact way that you're talking about in that movie.
By the way, just to you know, sidestep about Judge Dredd for a second, for the longest time, I'd seen Demolition Man and Judge Dredd back in the 90s, and I don't think I had the appreciation for Demolition Man that I have for it now. In fact, so much so that I, for over a decade, would confuse the two movies, because obviously they're both kind of futuristic.
Right, it's Stallone does future, and Rob Schneider's involved.
Right. So you've got Judge Dredd, you've got Demolition Man. I was like, ah, oh, they're both just nonsense action garbage Stallone movies. And then watching Demolition Man, I'm like, wait a minute, what's the movie with him and the mask? And, you know, and it's like, oh, that's Judge Dredd. And I'm like, oh, maybe Judge Dredd is also this kind of undiscovered gem in my mind because I saw such a... Oh, no. Oh, Judge Dredd is the worst. No, it's horrible.
Didn't you and I watch Demolition Man? This might have been your reintroduction to it. It was like a Saturday afternoon. We were at my house. Our wives were out getting their periods waxed.
Waxed.
And we watched Demolition Man, and it was rad.
It might have been, yeah. I mean, I feel like I've seen it probably 10 times in the past 5 or 6 years, but that might have been the reintroduction for sure.
So Dennis Leary, this movie had a weird like MTV tie-in. I remember MTV doing a lot of promotion for Demolition Man. Now I don't know if that's just because they had that fat Taco Bell money coming in,
Demolition Man,
or because Dan Cortez does a cameo in the movie and he was one of their
cameo.
He was one of their boys at the time. Every time I see Dan Cortez, I just think of Kevin Allison on the stage doing
yes
MTV Sports with the no. It wasn't Kevin Allison. Who is it? Is it Joe LaTrue? Who's doing it?
No, I think it's Ken Marino.
I can't remember. Like, what are you talking about? I can't even see when he's got the golf balls on his eyes.
It does sound like Kevin Allison.
I think it's Kevin Allison.
He's doing like the high kicks and the freeze frames.
Yeah.
That's colors. Yeah, that's
MTV Sports. It's sports and it's MTV. So Dennis Leary is kind of an MTV personality at the time. And 93 is like the year that everyone says, let's get that smoking, ranting Bill Hicks ripoff from MTV and let's put him in all of the movies. Because in 1993, in addition to Demolition Man, he makes Loaded Weapon 1, The Sandlot, Who's the Man, Gunmen, and Judgment Night.
Oh, when's The Rough come out?
The Rough comes out 1 year later, and that's really his first kind of starring role.
And The Ref isn't bad.
No, The Ref is decent and finds, you know, the right part for him to play. And it's not that he's bad in all these movies. Like, in The Sandlot, he's inoffensive. He's just playing kind of a grumpy stepdad type.
Sure.
But in most of the movies, he's kind of called upon to do Dennis Leary shtick.
Well, there's one scene
none more so than Demolition Man.
Oh, my God. That one scene in particular in Demolition Man where he's like, it's this showcase
just riff Dennis.
I am Marco Brambilla. I want you to riff, talk about smoking, talk about eating meat, talk about Playboy magazine.
Big label.
Talk about these movies. That's the best.
I want to talk about the movies in a second too, but yeah, that rant is infuriating because it's out of step with the movie. It's just annoying that, like, oh, now we got to let Dennis Leary do his Dennis Leary thing. Did audiences in 93 stand up and cheer? Like, that's what we came to see. Yeah, there's our boy. The rant that he goes on doesn't even make sense. Like, he wouldn't even know what most of those things are. Am I crazy? The way that he talks about the things that he wants to do have been gone for so long, unless I have my timeline wrong.
I would go back to the thing you said before. Even if people did stand up and cheer in the theater, it's like that should never be the reason to introduce any sort of side joke to a movie. Because again, that is a time capsule.
I think about it's like putting Pauly Shore in your movie and having him play Edgar Friendly, and he's just like,
and he has Simon Phoenix. Sound.
Yeah, right. You're harshing on my nugs, Simon Phoenix. The weasel. Exactly. Pauly Shore made Son-in-Law in 1993.
Ooh, callback. I like it. So yeah, Dennis Leary is fine when he's not doing his rant, but the rant I just find annoying just because I'm just over it. But maybe back in 93, it was like still refreshing to hear a Bill Hicks ripoff.
But right, it's him doing what he does on MTV. All of a sudden, the movie stops so he can do his little MTV shtick, whatever. Right. And again, another name, Edgar Friendly. The names in this movie are fucking crazy. Edgar Friendly, Simon Phoenix, John Spartan. Lenina Huxley is somehow the least offensive name in the
movie.
And
that one is the most sort of like drawn from
Fucking nose.
Right. Yeah, I call this Huxley Brave New World. Like,
I'm clever. I'm not Daniel Waters. I'm one of those other guys.
I am Robert Reniel.
He's French.
I assume he's French.
Yeah.
Robert Reniel.
There were so many accents on this movie.
Have you seen my movie, Action Jackson? It is how you say ragu.
Last week, I was listening to the How Did This Get Made podcast, and they were talking about Tango and Cash, and they point out that every Joel Silver movie, every Joel Silver production just has like random nudity, random boobs at some point. And in Tango and Cash, it's like they're doing it's in a car chase in the middle of the day, possibly the morning, in a parking garage of an apartment building. And there's two people like making out in a car, and the girl sits up and she's topless. And they're asking, like, if they're in an apartment complex, why not just go into the apartment? Why are they fucking in a car at 8 a.m. whatever. So the random boobs, right? And so then I'm watching Demolition Man, rewatching Demolition Man. And at one point, John Spartan tries to make a call and dials a wrong number, and the woman answers and she's nude and we see her boobs, and it doesn't make any sense because, again, in this puritanical society where there is no physical contact, why is she answering the phone nude for who I assume is her husband and or boyfriend?
Right. No, it's very weird.
We don't see each other nude anymore. I don't know.
It was a very odd scene. It struck me. I had to go back and watch it again.
Excuse to put boobs. Like, this movie did not need boobs in it.
I'm like, did that just happen? Pause. What? When did she actually appear? Pause. Step forward.
We just don't need the random boobs in Demolition Man. That's all.
I want to say something too about when the movie first. It's been about 2 years since I've seen the movie. I watched it a couple nights ago for the purpose of this podcast.
Thank you.
I was like, Demolition Man. I'm like, why is this movie before the movie just starts? And I'm like, why is this movie called Demolition Man? Surely it's just sort of a made up nonsense name,
dude. They say it right at the beginning.
They say it about 10 fucking times.
Especially in the end, and it doesn't make sense either when he's like, oh, what do you think of the new world? And she's like, now that you've demolished everything? Like, no, he didn't. No, he didn't fucking demolish anything.
But even the notion that, like, the police chief in 96 in Hollywood or in South Central, wherever.
None of your Demolition Man bullshit!
Right, like Demolition Man. I just don't understand.
It rolls off the tongue.
Right. You're a demolition guy.
Because then Sting wrote a song called Demolition Man, and it plays over the credits.
Good gravy. He wrote that song before the movie came out, though, didn't he?
I don't know.
Okay, I don't have my this might be wrong, but I want to say that while Sting was in the police, he either wrote or had referenced a, quote, Demolition Man in a police song from, like, the early 80s. And then they
So this is one of those things where, like, they just named it after a song and had to work it in?
Possibly, but regardless, you've got the Sting song, which I don't think the song he sings at the end over the credits.
Demolition Man is a song written by Sting and performed by Grace Jones as the A-side of a 1981 single. The Police later released their rendition of the song on their album Ghost in the Machine. So, yeah, it's an older – so they just named the movie for the song.
Which, by the way, is like, who remembers of all the police songs? And on police, I can take or leave. I mean, there's some great police songs, but I'm not a huge Sting fan. And when Sting comes on during the end credits, it's like, it just meets all the criteria of that action genre. Right. You know, like, we got to have the song that's named after the movie. Let's stick that here. You're going to meet me.
It should have been Bob Dylan's rendition of Knocking on Heaven's Door.
Thank you.
Yes,
the Weapon 2 callback. Right?
Always with the Joel Silver. No, this is the approach that I used to take in like fifth grade when I would dream up screenplays in my head. They were always named after songs, like a title of a song. I'd be like, "That's a movie," and I would devise a story around it. And so that's clearly what someone did. Is they were like, "Let's write a movie called Demolition Man."
I believe Ratburger actually covered most of these songs in high school, didn't they?
We deconstructed them is what we did. We were pretty artistic. What, not to put you on the spot, are there any lines of dialogue in the movie that stand out as being the worst?
Well, I mean, everything Stallone says, right? Okay. I mean, we've gone over so much of that. I think, though, that the movie has so much quotable dialogue and so much that sticks with it. Obviously, the first takeaway from 1993, it's murder, death, kill, which if you really deconstruct that, it also kind of doesn't make any sense. Like, murder, death, kill isn't murder and kill. I mean, they're kind of dissimilar, but whatever. But
well, MDK, it's this idea that somehow they've regressed to a society of children, right? And that's kind of funny. I mean,
or that it happens so infrequently that they can just lump it all in the same category.
Right.
But then, like, when a person dies from natural causes, because everyone has a tracker in their hand and they know when people die instantaneously, do they also call it a murder, death, kill, or is that something else? I don't know. I mean, again, that's not to get too deep on Demolition Man, but I think MDK was the first takeaway in 93 that still to this day is like kind of clever, kind of ingenious. I think so much of the future stuff, the future tech is good, which a lot of, I think, futuristic movies don't get right. And I think some of the stuff in Demolition Man actually really, really works, including the car, the self-driving cars. Obviously, that's something that's happening right now in terms of like Google's self-driving cars and Teslas and all that stuff. You've got the tablets where people make phone calls from. All that stuff is, you know, pretty prescient. You've got the three seashells, obviously. I mean, who uses toilet paper anymore? I just use a seashell to clamp the poop out of my butt and use the third seashell to wipe up the aftermath and then just discard all the seashells in the toilet. I actually read an interesting story about Daniel Waters being stuck on a scene, like not stuck on a scene, but wanting to incorporate more future tech in the script. And he called a friend of his who was also a screenwriter and said, "Hey, I need something for this movie. It's about the future. Give me something like future tech." And the story goes, and it might be apocryphal, but the story goes that the person he was talking to was in his bathroom at the time and says, "Hey, I see on my toilet there's a bag of seashells." And Waters was like, "Oh yeah, I can do something with that." So that was
that's
but
great.
It's never explained. I mean,
which I love. That's one of the great things
about
that.
And I love the fact that it's never explained. And honestly, like, why? I mean, I know we'll run into this too, and it's fine when people have their theories about why. Even Stallone has a theory as to what the shells are used for. And my joke before, I think, was Stallone's actual theory, like that you take two seashells and pull out the turd, and the third seashell is used to clean up. And it's like, why are we even talking about this?
It does not require an explanation.
No, it's funny when Rob Schneider goes, he doesn't know how to use it. You know, it's just,
yes.
The joke works. And yes. It speaks to so much more than just that joke, too. It's the future. Like, you're not supposed to know how things work.
Right. And the joke, I think, another Stallone joke that works is when he starts swearing into the thing to get all his fines and uses those as toilet paper.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Although it's weird that, like, one of the first things that he does, like, he's thought out, he finds out his wife died, he needs to take a shit.
Oh my God, he's got 32 years of backlog in there, you know? Yeah, some bowl winders coming out in the future. But listen, I did a graceful, pretty masterful sidestep of your question. You asked me if there
was
stuff.
Yeah, is there a worst line? Terrible. I don't have one, so.
And I've said that there's a bunch of great stuff. I don't, even the stuff that's kind of like a little eye rolling now because I've seen it so much, like Enhance Your Calm and Be Well, I think that stuff all works. I do think it's the one-liners where Simon says die and Simon says bleed. And I think at one point he swings a television set. Stallone swings a TV at Simon Phoenix's head and says, "You're on TV," which is just like the worst. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, but those stuff, I mean, I don't remember those. I remember the good stuff, you know.
Wesley Snipes weirdly throws away so many of his lines. Like, he's got the line where he says, I've been dreaming about killing you for 40 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's not the worst line. It's not great, but whatever. It's like, it's fine, but he throws everything away by delivering it in a way that, like, none of the words register. I don't know how to explain it, but it's like he doesn't say things so that they count. It's like he just says, no. I don't know. And then, so that line is dumb, but then, of course, it's like Stallone has to fucking have his one line retort. Keep dreaming. Like,
yeah.
Why? This movie has too much of that and not enough Taco Bell.
I want to highlight, there's so much of Wesley Snipes and Simon Phoenix's lines are, I think when he first gets thawed out and is on the parole, in the Hannibal Lecter, you know, chair, being like at the parole hearing, one of the first things he said is like, they said, "Do you have anything to say?" And he says, again, I don't have this in front of me, but he says something like, "Yeah, teddy bear." And it's just nonsense.
He had to be making up half of his lines, right?
Right. So, but I mean, it's all the Stallone stuff is the worst, but all the other stuff I still think holds up. Like, where even the dopey, like, they don't shake hands; they just wave hands around.
Right.
And of course, the wizened African American police officer
Bill Cobb,
who was there. Bill Cobb, right? Who's there?
Del Paxton.
When he knows my biggest fan. John Spartan firsthand, and, you know, is only there to serve as a foil for you know, this guy was the best when I was there.
He was a real demolition man.
Right. You wanted things demolished, you called him.
It does. Again, the movie plays this weird version of itself where it's like all the future stuff. It's like this good, interesting movie that fucking Stallone wanders into and fucks up. And it's like, that's both the plot of the movie and what's going on as we watch Demolition Man.
So Sandra Bullock, you mentioned before, her next thing was Speed in 94. But do you know, I read this and I in the little factoids on IMDb, that she actually replaced Lori Petty.
In Demolition Man. I did.
In Demolition
Man. Yeah.
Which I want to go back to what you said before about how, like, this movie would not be, we'd not be talking about this. And I think you're absolutely right. Of course, there's so much to love and so much of it holds up, but her performance, her delivery. Do you think if Lori Petty was that character, I don't know. I honestly don't know Lori Petty aside from Point Break and Tank Girl. Those are like literally the two things I can think of.
A League of Their Own.
Oh, yeah. Okay. League of Their Own.
And that's probably primarily what I know her from as well. I mean, there's never, I don't mind her in Point Break, but there's never been a Lori Petty performance that I'm like, oh wow, she's so good. Yeah, she would have really made Demolition Man.
Right. In Point Break, I'm like, I can get her as, I can accept her as like the love interest of Johnny Utah.
Right.
That's his name, right?
Yeah, that's his name.
Is his name Johnny Moxon? Because I only think of, no, that's, wait, what's his name in Replacements? What's his,
fucking Shane Falco.
All right. I'm disappointing you right now. But I never thought of her, you know, like there's so many movies where, like, when you watch Sandra Bullock in Demolition Man, you want to, you fall in love with her and you want to, like, you want her to, you want to see her more in that rhinestone dress at Taco Bell. There was never a moment in Point Break where I'm like, I'm dying to see what Lori Petty brings to the table in the next scene, you know?
No. And what, she didn't get along with Stallone?
I don't know
exactly, but yeah, I don't know. It was just one of those things where it's like, it wasn't a good fit. So,
but also, I mean, besides Stallone and Snipes, they also considered Jean-Claude Van Damme and Steven Seagal as the two leads in this movie. I'm not sure why they backed off. And also Jackie Chan was considered to be the villain for a bit, but I think it's he doesn't like playing villains.
That would have been a mistake. And Van Damme would have played the shit out of Simon Phoenix, because we're now in a period where we've seen Van Damme do the villain a couple times and he's fucking great at it.
Right, but correct me if I'm wrong, at the time he only did Heroes, right?
He did. Yeah. Okay. He started out as a villain, but at this point, this was the year he did Hard Target and Nowhere to Run, both 93, and was primarily playing Heroes. So right. I think he would have played the shit out of the villain, but I think Seagal would have been so bad as John Spartan that this movie would have died. I mean, I have my issues with Stallone's performance, but Seagal would have been unbearable, I think.
In Hard Target, his name is Chance, right? Why is his name Chance?
I want to say because he's Mama Took One. but we'll find out on Saturday at FMS Movie Fest 4. For
sure. That's my falsetto, by the way.
Last thing I'm going to say about Sandra Bullock is it pisses me off when I watch this movie where she's just rendered unconscious in the finale so that the boys can save the day. And I think had Demolition Man been made in 2014, we would have seen a very different.
Yeah, for sure.
I think women in action films have come far enough along that we wouldn't have to, like, knock her out for her own safety, which is horse shit. Like, she should have played a bigger part in that climax. Now she should be, you know, Emily Blunt in Edge of Tomorrow. Like, that's who Lena Huxley should be. But,
yeah,
that always pisses me off. But
I think most women should be that, by the way.
Agreed. No arguments here. There's this new thing going around that, like, Emily Blunt should play Snake Plissken in the Escape from New York remake.
Ooh.
Number one, I'm fine with that. Number two, don't remake Escape from New York.
Right.
Number three, don't be the asshole who's like, no, Snake needs to be a man, which I've already read. Number four, they already did that. It was called Doomsday. Rona Mitra played Snake Plissken. They did this already, guys.
Wait, Rona Mitra, star of Hollow Man?
Star of Hollow Man.
Hollow Man.
Played basically Snake Plissken in a movie called Doomsday that Neil Marshall made a few years ago. Are we good on Demolition Man?
Yeah, I just want to repeat myself like I always do and say it's not at the same level as Starship Troopers, because Starship Troopers, every single beat, every single decision and choice is on purpose and works and is great. A lot of this is by chance, but
yeah,
I do think
I'd put it like if Starship Troopers is first tier, I would put this second tier.
Sure.
I think enough of it works in that same way that it deserves that spot.
And even the stuff that doesn't work, in quotes, is still stuff that, we find endearing. Just being kids of the 80s, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that we are endeared to and, you know, seek out and laugh at and quote to each other. And it becomes sort of, you know, legend, you know, even personally. So.
And I have a sneaking suspicion it's going to play like gangbusters at F This Movie Fest. So I'm very excited because I think this one's going to go over really well. Because
it is long. It's almost 2 hours.
Yeah, because we know what we're doing. That's why.
Because that's
right. We know what we're doing, everyone. Right. Feel free to tweet that out as often as you like.
I'm doing it right now.
Anyway, we hope all of you will join us for F This Movie Fest 4 on Saturday. It's really going to be such a good time. And Douglas, I'm sorry that you will not be here for it. I know you'll be with us on Twitter, but this is actually the first time that we'll be doing it, and you will be in another state.
I will be in the state of sleepiness. Yes. I will be very sleepy because it's early. 10 o'clock in the morning is usually when I'm...
And we always record a podcast at the end of it, and you're not going to be here for that, so that bums me out.
Not going to be in that one, so that's why. Let's make this one 3 hours long.
Let's do it, everyone. Anyway, thanks for listening to us talk about Demolition Man. For sure, join us on February 7th. Follow us on Twitter at FThisMovie, hashtag FThisMovieFest. For more information, go to fthismovie.net. It really is so much fun. We're working on getting celebrity guests. We hope some of them will participate. We don't know. But thank you guys very much for listening. Thank you, Douglas, for talking Demolition Man.
You're going to regret this for the rest of your life. Bold second look.